Members, I'd like to bring the Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Representative Fenton, would you move the minutes of St. Patrick's Day, March 17th?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Thank you. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Representative Jaskowski, you are the only thing on the agenda today, so we should be done in a matter of by 10 o'clock. Representative Jaskowski, I will move your House File 1707 to be passed and sent on to taxes. I'm sorry, I'll amend my motion that House File 1707 will be passed and moved on to taxes. That is what I said. I thought at first I said it wrong, but I said it right twice, so it's going to only move once. Representative Jaskowski, welcome. Good morning, and welcome back to the committee that you used to serve on.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, members, for being involved in discussion around this bill today. Members, this bill is really really represents the results of, I think, efforts we've many of us have talked about over the last 3 or 4 years now or more. And I know the chair and I and others have been engaged in this discussion about how in the future, as future land purchases are made by both the legacy dollars and the LCCMR dollars, how those acquisition and maintenance costs for those future purchases, if they are made, which I suspect they will be, how those are paid for. And in the past, we know that basically PILT payments are paying for those costs from the general fund. In some areas of the state, those PILT payments are adequate and accurate, accurately represent the costs of management, long-term management of those parcels. In others, and in many, they do not. And so what this aims to do is to, and really in response also, and I had brought up, Mr. Chair, when I was in committee here, the discussion around the legislative auditor's report from, I think it was 2011, about land ownership in Minnesota. And you probably heard me extolling at that time some of the discussion from the report about the citation in the report about the state not having the ability or the financial capacity to fully manage the properties which they already owned. And so this bill, Mr. Chair and members, is our effort to, and we have had multiple meetings. Mr. Sulem is here with me, and he'll be talking to you soon. But we convene meetings with all of the stakeholders would, or at least all the people that we needed to put together a bill that worked well, including the township associations, the counties, the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and of course we had some of our very smart people upstairs there too, and Ms. Taylor's here today, and she was one of those smart people in our meeting. So I think we met three different times or something like that, and this is the culmination of it. And the way it works, members, and maybe Mr. Sulem and Ms. Taylor can talk about this, but it develops a staging account, a special account, if you will, in which in both LCC and Mr. Chair, in front of us is 1707, which is the LCCMR one. House File 1706 is currently in the Legacy Committee, and that's the Outdoor Heritage one.
Representative Jaskowski, you have the A1, and I'm wondering if you want to move it. I'll move the A1. That would actually probably put the bill into shape so that we could discuss it in the context of both. As you said, the Lessard-Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council portion was referred to Legacy, where I suspect they will hear it at some point in time. But as long as you're hearing one, and the implications are, for the most part, the discussion would probably be better if we did it in application to both of those. So, members, I'd like to move the A1. Representative Jaskowski, as he's talked about the bill, then it would apply both to LCCMR and Lessard-Sams. Discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, the A1's adopted. Representative Drazkowski, I think the other amendment probably is considered technical. Ms. Taylor, why don't you just tell us what this amendment does and I'll move the A2.
Mr. Chair, members, the A2 amendment is a technical amendment. It clarifies that the provision would go into effect on July 1st. I think there's a few spots where it said after July 1, and this would just clarify that.
Okay, discussion to the A2. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, so Representative Drazkowski, I think you have the bill in the shape that you'd like to discuss. Do you want to? We have the testifiers, Representative Drazkowski, or do you have more to say? I don't know. You might not have been done. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, maybe I could be done here, but just quickly, it forms a staging account that in both of these cases, both the LCCMR and the Outdoor Heritage situations, the legislature would each year provide an appropriation to that account to make certain there's enough in there to cover the anticipated land purchases from each of those respective areas. And then from that, the Department of Revenue, and I'm trying to remember exactly how it works, will then, through their estimations or their actually negotiations, communications would be the right word, with the counties about what the right amounts would be according to the bill, will appropriate to the respective counties in which those land purchases were made the amount of money necessary then to go into the county's particular trust fund. And the counties are required to maintain a trust fund in the bill for those land purchases so that money grows properly over time to cover those costs of the property tax related type costs into the future. So that's how the bill works. You'll see in the bill reference to two areas that will talk about trust. One is kind of that holding account, which would be here at the legislature in your control in this committee, and then the other is a trust account each of the counties will have so that their respective dollars then appreciate properly and provide for growth in the fund. So that's just kind of an overview, but Mr. Chair, Mr. Sulem or maybe Ms. Taylor wants to talk through the specifics of the bill first, however you'd like to proceed.
Mr. Sulem. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ken Sulem, General Counsel and Director of Governmental Relations for the Minnesota Association of Townships. And I'm very happy to be here this morning. As Representative Drazkowski said, this effort reflects several years. I think I actually started on it about 5 years ago that we first started having discussions about what do we do long-term for the loss of property tax. And the loss of property tax is a very, very serious issue, especially at the town level. We are currently, according to the state auditor's report, 76% property tax dependent at the township level. 76% property tax dependent. That's just not a sustainable model. We have some counties, and I think you'll hear more from the next couple of testifiers, that have, you know, 60, 70, 80% of their land off the tax roll. And yet, despite that, there are still many efforts, and we're not saying they're good or bad, but there are efforts that are looking, you know, improving water qualities, restoring native prairies, trying to provide increased public hunting land, wetland offsets, et cetera. They're going to see thousands upon thousands of additional acres coming off the tax roll, most likely in the next 20 years or thereabouts as we have the legacy funding. This is going to put a bigger strain on the local budget and continue to shift burdens onto the remaining property owners. Now, there are those who will say, well, yeah, but there's no services offered to these public lands, so therefore there's no real expense. This is simply not true. In fact, in many cases, the costs actually increase. Towns still are providing the emergency services, fire, EMTs, search and rescue, and of course, the roads have to be maintained to provide access. Frequently, these roads actually have to be improved and upgraded because instead of one farmer having access to his fields, now you've got many hunters or other recreational users. We also have, unfortunately, situations where you have more and more ATV riders who decide to have fun in the middle of the road, particularly if it's been raining, and they can do some great spin-outs and wreak great havoc on our roads. And so we actually have more and more need as lands come off the tax roll. Is that why we have payment in lieu of taxes? Yes. But as Representative Drazkowski indicated, that simply has never been a good, stable model to use. There are some counties that come out ahead than they would be received from property taxes. There are many others that come out well below their lost taxes. And I can tell you at the township level, until the 2013 increase, we were down to pennies, literally pennies on the dollar being reimbursed down to us with the way the various formulas work. And so, you know, what we have to look at is that long term, not just one snapshot in time saying this county got more than they should have in this year, but they lost it in the next year. We have to look at that long term averaging, and PILT in its current format simply has not been stable for that need. House File 1707 reflects the discussions, included one official task force and many, many side conversations that keeps coming back to the same thing. The best approach is a pay-as-you-go. We can't send the state tax bill. That might be fun, that you know the townships and counties could send a bill to this state, but that's just not a practical way to get things paid. And so what we've come up with is kind of the approach that you would do if you buy a parcel of property yourself, a private transaction. At that time, when you make the purchase, you'll see on the closing document that one of the things required is an assurance that the property tax has been paid for that year. Well, in this case, it's got to be paid not only for the year of acquisition, but for all years going forward, because that plan is forever coming off our tax roll. So what we've done with 1707 is set up a process where when property is acquired, either solely using the funds that we were discussing, the Natural Resource Funds and the LCCMR Outdoor Heritage Lessard Sam monies, the state would place into a special holding account an amount equal to 30 times the tax, that property tax that is owed on that parcel at the time of acquisition, the last assessed property value. Then, once per year, the county will provide the Department of Revenue with the data for which parcels were taken off the tax rolls in that year. The Department of Revenue then will transfer from that holding account, the special holding account, to the counties at an amount equal to that 30 times the tax rate. The counties must invest that. That's, we walk through the bill, you'll see in page 2, they are required to invest that into their own trust. Now, because many counties are going to have limited staff and limited other revenues, it may not be practical for them to set up their own trust. Therefore, we are providing that they can contract with the department, Minnesota Board of Investments, and have easier times administrating that trust. Then, with that money sitting there earning the interest in that account for the county, each year when the property taxes are owed, there would be an assessment made to that account saying, all right, we have X number of dollars that are coming, that are owed for all these properties that are covered by 1707 and 1706, any persons using those funds. That property tax now would be paid to each of the entities, schools, counties, townships, cities. They would each receive their share of the lost property tax if there's those properties located within their jurisdiction. So this is actually working for everybody instead of just a couple of winners and losers. The idea of the 30-year amount came about when we started trying to do some number crunching and working with the Board of Investments several years ago, that what amount would generate the interest and allow the trust to continue to grow so that it's still there 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, when that property is still being used for the legitimate purpose, but it's still off the tax rolls, that there's some revenues adequate to come in. And I am not a financial analyst. I don't know how they crunch all these numbers. But when we looked at that account in the beginning, 30 years was the number that was recommended. Ms. Dalton has put together a memo recently that I believe was handed out or is in your packets now that goes back and reanalyzes that figure and determines that when you look at the continued rate of growth on the lands that are acquired using these monies, 30 years continues to be the closest approximation we can to having a true dollar-for-dollar ability to offset the lost taxes. And so that's simply where it came from. It wasn't just grabbed out of the air. It was, in fact, well-investigated, and those who can do the financial number crunching back then and now are sure they're telling us that 30 years is the right number to put in. So now the counties are making the payment back to the locals, and it's a dollar-for-dollar replacement. There's nobody getting wealthy on this. There's nobody getting excess on this. And hopefully, if all the numbers that we're crunching are the way we assume, nobody's taking a loss either. It's a stable replacement year to year, dollar for dollar. There is a cap provided that they cannot withdraw more than 5.5% of the trust account, so that if there are some slow years, we don't drain the principal faster than it can grow back under the guiding principles. But that's it. It's a pretty straightforward approach. There's no games. There's no winners or losers. We're not trying to prohibit acquisition of lands. Our policy at our association no longer contains a no net gain policy. It says no net loss of property tax. It's this committee that decides what are proper acquisitions. The legacy committee will make recommendations of what are proper acquisitions. We're not trying to second guess those. That is not our intent. Our intent is simply to say, as you've seen, going back to the definitions, at the start of the bill, an acknowledgement of what are the costs of that acquisition. If the policy, if the need for that property is enough where the state wants to spend money and take the tax loss, then they need to account for all the expenses with that, and that includes the property tax. Now, there are some questions and issues I'm sure many of you have heard. One being, well, isn't this just a supplanting? You know, the constitutional amendment says we can't supplant. We need a supplement. Well, this is a supplement to current process. PILT is not going away. There are actually bills looking to increase the funding for traditional PILT payments. This is, but in under the PILT programs, you will see numerous classifications of property, each getting reimbursed at a different formula rate. We tried to simplify that in 2013, but there are still many divisions of properties getting different types of payments. What's happening under 1707 is just the establishment of recognition, one more classification, that we have this property being acquired with the funds indicated, that now the formula used to pay that will be this straight dollar for dollar using the invested 30-year payment from the state. There's nobody getting wealthy again, no winners or losers. It's not supplanting because it is consistent with and working side by side with the existing PILT program for the other properties. But didn't the Attorney General already say that this process is illegal? No. There is no Attorney General opinion out there. There is a letter from the Attorney General that says this is not an opinion. I think that also states we do not issue hypothetical opinions. We cannot, by the code of the office, issue hypothetical opinions. The letter goes on to then analyze the general wording of the constitutional amendment and makes clear the debate on supplanting and supplementing, but does not reach any conclusion on the proposals in 1707. It's not been there. They don't issue hypotheticals. And even if there was a more formal opinion, it is just that. It's an opinion. We can use it for guidance. I've got an opinion. I'm sure some of you have your opinions as well. It's guidance. It's not a binding legal issue. Again, it's simply not there. There's a lot of talk about voter intent. What was the voter's intent of the amendment? That's not a debate we're here to have. That's not the purpose of this bill. But I can assure you that I don't think anybody who voted for the amendment thought that their property taxes would go up because all the properties are coming off the tax roll. They were assuming that there's going to be benefit and that the state will, in fact, look at the total cost of the acquisitions that are needed to foster the other aspects of the goals and objectives of the amendment. So that's it. It's pretty straightforward. No games, no gimmicks. Pay as we go. Pay the exact amount that is owed, as close as we can project for that. Keep it off the general fund. Keep it stable and make it work for now and into the future. With that, I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Draskowski and Mr. Sullum. Mr. Sullum, I have one question. We also had a work group, was it in 2011, maybe, that met a number of times throughout the summer and looked at this issue also. Could you just remind me who was involved in that and do I have the right year?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There was, I believe it was 2012, it was the prior year's legislation that you carried that created a study committee. We looked at putting this into place at that time, the bill that you see before you, something very similar, but because it hadn't been fully vetted, there hadn't been the long discussions, we created the study committee through the DNR, and a report was issued. Actually, no, I think you're right. We actually met in 2011, and the report was issued in January of 2012. One of the sections of that report said that This is a definite concern that needs to be met. At that time, during that task force, we looked at several different approaches, and the only one that kept coming back to being accurate and viable was this pay-as-you-go approach. And so we were going to have another task force this past summer. I'm not exactly sure where it came out of the bill. It was in on Friday and out by Saturday. And so instead of having another formal work group, we had the informal efforts that you were part of leading into the drafting of this language.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to also add that this discussion has been going on for a while now. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this would be probably to our testifier, maybe somebody else who might be able to help out on it, is I heard reference to the opinion by the Attorney General that was mentioned, but I know we don't have a copy of that opinion. I was wondering if there's a way that we can get a copy of that. Seeing it's been referenced, I'd like to at least be able to read it and see what it has to say.
Mr.
Solomon.
Representative Fisher, and again, it's not an opinion. It is just this advisory letter.
I'm sorry.
I tried very hard to look in my files. I had a very difficult time getting a copy of it the first time. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find it in time for this morning, but we will keep we'll be able to locate a copy and provide that to you.
And Representative Fisher, we'll find that for sure and get it to the committee members. And again, it's not an opinion from the Attorney General. It's a letter. And the reality, I think, Mr. Solomon, you didn't say it, but I think the Attorney General said there is a chance that if it went to court, that it may get thrown out. I mean, that's the reality, you know. And Mr. Solomon, you have your opinion, as you said, but the reality is your opinion's based on 3 or 4 years of law school and practicing law. My opinion would be on 30 years as a landscaper, saying I don't agree with the Attorney General that I think it'll get overthrown. So, as you said, we've all got opinions about it based on different things.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, there's an old saying that, you know, a good lawyer knows the law, a great lawyer knows the judge.
we won't go there. Representative Hansen.
Judiciary Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a couple of clarifying questions. I apologize for coming in late. We were at the same event, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, on the, I'm looking at the timing for clarification here. So am I understanding right that there would not be any double payments, that the current PILT stays into effect until January 1st of 15 for all the funds that you're talking about, and then this new super PILT would go into effect after that. Is that correct?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen. Yeah, the intention is, and maybe Ms. Taylor can help us in the bill, but we make it clear that these properties that might be purchased in the future are no longer eligible for the different sections of law that provide for PILT entitlement. So maybe Ms. Taylor could
Ms. Taylor, directly to, I think, where Representative Hansen is coming from, would it apply to the two bills that are moving through the legislature now, which would be this year's current LCCMR and Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council bills?
Mr. Chair, members, it would, as drafted and with the amendment, it would apply to anything purchased with funds appropriated July 1st of this year and thereafter. So anything that's been purchased in the past would not be affected. It'd just be going forward.
And Ms. Taylor, clarifying language for me, because probably maybe even a majority of the property, like in last year's Lessard-Sams bill, and maybe some in LCCMR too, has not been purchased yet. Would it apply to those properties, even though the bill was passed last year's legislature and the property hasn't been bought yet?
Mr. Chair, it would not apply to those. The funds would need to be appropriated on or after July 1st of this year.
Okay, so I wanted that on the record to be clarified that there's property that's still going to be bought but was appropriated in previous year's legislature, because otherwise people would be caught in a catch-22. You know, there's not the money there to make this payment. So that's where we're at. Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, that's what I did want to get on the record, because we may even have properties that are from two or three fiscal years that haven't been closed, and we don't want to have a catch-22. I do have a couple policy questions.
Representative Hansen.
Representative Drazkowski, you know, with both of these funds, folks went to the voters. I went out and campaigned for the legacy amendment. I don't know if I've ever met any Minnesotan who thought they'd be paying property taxes with the legacy or the trust fund dollars. I mean, I don't see it in the language of the Constitution. So how, not the supplant or supplement question, but the actual purpose of the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund and the Outdoor Heritage Trust Fund, how does this meet the constitutional language?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, first of all, I think Mr. Sulem kind of pointed to it. I don't think that any Minnesotan that voted for it expected voting for it would not only require that they pay sales tax for it, which was evident when they voted for it, but that they also have to pay additional property taxes because of it. And so I think that's something for us to think about, too. And that's what this bill tries to remedy, so that people are not sitting with a property tax liability on top of the 3/8 in sales tax. I hearken back to the legislative auditor's report from 2011, and Mr. Nobles in his report, I think, outlined very clearly the different costs of managing state-owned property throughout the state. We have parcels of property, many of them where, and I've heard from many of the landowners in my district, where they're required to uphold the noxious weed law. And the DNR is the biggest offender because, it just doesn't get done on state level. There might be some isolated cases, but the goal is that that this would provide for the maintenance required on that land locally going forward.
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I'd also like to add, obviously everything is in how you pose a question to a voter. What was their intent? What were they thinking? But, excuse me, I think anybody would understand that's gone through a land transaction that if you decide that acquisition of the land, which also is not referenced in most areas as far as the constitutional language, but if you look at saying, yes, we think that acquiring land is part of the objective, I think everybody would agree that part of the acquisition is what are the costs associated, and that includes paying the taxes. You do that on a private transaction, you'll be doing it here, that you're meeting the closing costs, if you will, the acquisition costs of that acquisition. And so I don't think you can separate the two. One is a very direct relation to the other.
Representative.
I remember the ads. I remember even on the lottery, the balloon. Balloon never said to help me pay property taxes. I don't remember any of the brochures or any of the ads or any of the campaign talking about property taxes. And I think we've had existing PILT law, and the legislature has been modifying that since the legacy amendment went through. I've still, to protect, restore, and enhance, is this establishment of a fund essential to protecting, restoring, enhancing prairies, wetlands, forests, and fish, game, wildlife habitat? How does this achieve those action words in the Constitution?
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, again, I never, and with all due respect, I'm not trying to be flippant here or anything, but I never saw that loon, I never saw the balloon say, take the land off the tax rolls, take the land off the tax rolls either. People had legitimate issues and concerns, and if you assume that acquisition of the property achieves the goals and objectives of providing the cleaner waters and public access to hunting land and all the other items that were part of the legacy debate, then again, my point keeps coming back to, if you make the assumption that acquiring property is necessary for that, you have to look at it. What are the acquisition costs of acquiring that property? And if you do a private transaction, it's going to include the taxes. That's what we're saying. This is no different than that. Acquisition of property is appropriate. All associated costs with that acquisition need to be addressed.
I would just add, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I was at a property tax town hall meeting with Representative Hancock in his district, and I'll tell you, when you get into areas where there's a lot of state land, it's very palpable with people about what they are being required to pay because of additional state land being purchased. And we'll hear probably from a county or two where they've got a high amount of state land. But the intent here is to make certain that we are not further burdening those local people by buying that state land, and that we are not placing additional costs onto them. So it's really looked at as making certain that we pay for the full cost of that purchase when we make that decision.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Drazkowski, I think there may be some places where we agree. I'm just not sure where I see the authority here, but every year we could make we make policy decisions on what we are going to appropriate for. So we could, as a legislature, make the choice of funding restoration enhancement to the exclusion of acquisition. We could. We haven't done that. I think we vote every year on the package for both the lottery and the legacy dollars, and we could be making those policy choices on what we want to do. But we've had a mix of across acquisition, restoration, enhancement. I may want more restoration on our existing portfolio of lands, but it's a compromise of what we get when we put that package together. What this does, is there any idea of how much this would be? What in aggregate, if you take, just say, 100% of an appropriation, how much? What's the percent in let's say, the lottery dollars that each year's appropriation would be going into the proposal? How much are we talking about? How many dollars are we talking about, or what percentage of an annual appropriation would be going into this fund?
Mr. Solomon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's going to depend on which properties are acquired. I can't give you a actual, you know, without knowing more of the acquisitions that decisions are being made right now by this committee and the other committees with jurisdiction. We would have to finalize what that number is, what the intent acquisition is, and then work with the counties and Department of Revenue for the final crunch.
Representative Hansen. Oh, you're good. Representative Fabian, to this point.
Well, Mr. Chair, it goes back a couple of points. When Representative Hansen was talking about the monies that are still not appropriated, where the purchase hasn't been made, can we get some sort of report from Lessard Sams and Mr. Johnson maybe on how many dollars are left kind of in the queue and haven't been spent? It might be helpful.
And Representative Fabian, that is available because Lessard Sams does get that information, so we can get that out on where those are at. Thank you. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so I'm happy to be a co-author on this bill because we've been beating around the bush here on this situation for quite a number of years, regardless of who's in the majority or who's not in the majority. First thing I'd like to caution members to not call this super filch, because I, Representative Hansen used that name a bit ago. Really, this is not a super filch. It's just simply what is owed, no more, no less. I think Mr. Suleman, I didn't think he said no harm, no foul, but what's owed is paid. secondly, is that I would argue that my legislative district has the highest leverage of public lands in the state. I have a county with over 90%, another one near 90%, and another one in the high 80%. And even with that, that incredible high percentage of ownership of public land, whether it be state or federal, when I talk about PILT in my legislative district at town meetings, I never use the word PILT if I don't first say payment in lieu of taxes, because if I said PILT, they'd think that was a disease that a doctor was diagnosing at the clinic. we are lucky in the North in this sense, that the Lessard Sams has not been on a buying binge up in those counties. Frankly, there's not much left to buy. But so we aren't being so-called attacked in the name of PILP. But in other areas, at least at the present time, on those particular acquisitions, but other areas are seeing significant amounts of land bought and purchased with the public funds. Going to the idea of the voters and what the voters perceive, we're always trying to figure that out around here. Well, I had the opportunity to pass the actual legislation in my game and fish bill in concert with Representative Sertich to actually get this on the ballot. And I have asked this question over and over and over in my, when I explain PILP to the people who are in my town meetings, and then I asked that question, how many people voted for this? And it was about it was just barely a winner in my legislative district. But to a person, except for the land acquisition people, the people who want more and more, they never even thought about the idea that there was this property tax situation that could actually cost them more money by having it bought by the state. It didn't cross their mind. They didn't think of it. They're more worried about making a car payment or a house payment or making sure their kids get to school on time. And so I guess the point I'm trying to make is that it has to be used the wisdom of this legislature and these members of these committees and the floor and the governor to figure that out on behalf of the voters, because the voters didn't know. The loon doesn't speak English. You know, I mean, we've got to make those decisions, and that's the reason I strongly support a bill that gets to this point. I'm not positive that this is the perfect bill. I don't know that there is a perfect bill, but someday, someplace, we're going to make some headway on this. And it's going to be more important to get started now than wait another 10 years and get started then. Because then we're just like our roads and bridges, we're behind the eight ball, allegedly, on maintenance. We are going to be, I mean, I only have to go to the point that we love to have parks. Love to have state parks. I'm blessed with state parks in my district. The highest number in the entire state per district. But we have $100 million backlog. We love to do stuff and then not pay for it. So it's the time for this committee and others to figure out how to pay for it. One last thing, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the latitude to make these statements. I was in the hall recently, and a lobbyist for one of the conservation groups came up to me and said, this is a person that I dearly respect and very nice person, said, do you realize that bill would take money away from land acquisition? And I said, that is exactly the reason the bill is here, is because the people in my district, when they know about this, they fear it. They fear the fact that we might get more. And that's the reason we have to pay for it and pay for it in perpetuity. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like first to refer to the bill summary. When I first read it, my heart kind of skipped a beat. In the first paragraph under overview, it says, payment to be made to counties equal to 30 times the tax assessed value. That seems a little extravagant, Mr. Chair.
They're overworked.
I think it's a typo.
How about if you ask your second question and then staff will tell us what it was meant to say? Or don't you have a second question?
I have a second question.
Okay, why don't you ask that while we get staff a chance to react to your... Are you ready?
I think
she's ready. She's ready already. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, it is not a typo. It is a one-time payment that's equal to 30 times the tax value so that they can put it in account.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. What is the tax assessed value? Isn't that what the assessor says the land is worth?
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, now I understand. Yes, it is then. It would be the tax payment, so the amount of the tax.
Representative Torkelson, you're lucky. You don't get her very often wrong.
I don't think, Mr. Chair, I don't think it was her. There's two names listed under the analyst category, and I'm
no,
sure it was.
Yeah.
I'm
Ms.
sure
Taylor
it was
didn't
that,
get it wrong.
That person from the tax committee that probably messed it up.
But you know, Representative Torkelson, your next question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My next question refers to, you know, how do we know that going from county to county that the level of this taxation is appropriate? And is there going to be some temptation to kind of counties to mess with that?
Mr. Sulem, you want to walk through how that works a little bit?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, again, property tax, the determination of the property tax doesn't change under this bill. It is the normal process. So at the town level, it would be what's approved at the annual meeting. That would be the tax that we certify to the county, and that would be our share of the tax. The county has its process, the truth in taxation hearings, and when it's all put together, you get the bill that equals the total property tax that's being paid. It's your special taxing district. The school districts go through their process. I don't think you'll see any attempts to play games or increase property taxes just to get extra payments here, because I don't think most elected officers want to campaign on, we're raising your property tax because we want to. I just don't think that's an argument you're going to see. Most entities are doing their best to keep taxes down, and by taking this approach, for the state stepping up and saying, yes, this is a legitimate project, we've vetted it through the committee, but we need to cover all costs, and that includes how do we pay the tax obligation in perpetuity. The 30-year figure is what now twice analysis has concluded is the right amount to have the money grow in the trust, so that 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, there's still payments being made, but it's a dollar-for-dollar replacement. You can only assess to that trust, you can only withdraw from the trust that value that has already been placed on the property.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then going forward, once this is established, it's locked in, and in spite of changes in valuation of other properties in the area, this would not change? Is that the way it's meant to be?
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, borrowing from the current programs of PILT, there would be a reassessment every 6 years.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. So then every 6 years, this contract of sorts could change?
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, it's not going to change what's paid in. That's a one-time payment. It's there. It's locked in. It's just reflecting that property values do normally increase. Sometimes there's a decrease depending on the market. But generally, especially with ag and recreational properties, we have seen a very consistent growth in the value of that property. And so that six-year rule is what's used on other non-taxable lands to determine what is the lost property tax. And so we're just using consistent current law to apply that now to this payment. So it's not going to change the trust payment. It just allows them to have what's the accurate withdrawal for the next year's tax property tax.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, Mr. Sulem, is there then some risk that over time, that as if inflation starts moving these numbers higher, that we could actually, the trust fund would be inadequate to meet the demand over time?
Time out, Mr. Sulem. we did distribute to members the AG letter, and it's available to the public if they're wondering what was just set up there. It is a copy of the AG letter that Mr. Sulem referenced. Our able staff was able to dig that up. Somebody was gracious enough to email it to them, and staff went up and photocopied it. Do you remember Representative Torkelson's question? Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, is there a risk that the trust fund could, for whatever reason, become inadequate to pay? Yes, but based on the runs that we have, the best ability we have to forecast, we're guarding against that in the only way we know. The problem we have right now, of course, is with the current PILT payments. It's there too. We're at the mercy of what is appropriated each year, rather than even having some protection of the trust. That's that one-time advance payment. Now we're year to year. What are you guys being appropriated, if anything? And like I said, from the beginning of the PILT to the fix that came in 2013. Townships were down to literally pennies on the dollar in reimbursement.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could add.
Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, maybe look at also Ms. Dalton's memo. She outlines, and I think it's really it's important that we get that number, that 30 is the proper number, right, because that's really predicated on really the trend of property tax growth over time, and Ms. Dalton's got that the last 9-year growth included in her letter there, and that really forms a foundation for that number. And I will just add, Representative Torkelson and Mr. Chair, that I've also asked the Department of Revenue to put together a similar analysis to this, so we'll have one more data point in the future that we can reference to make sure that we at least start with the best number we can.
To that point, Representative Drazkowski, I will make available to members. There was a handout from the chair of Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council that laid out an alternative layout of why Chair Hartwell thought that 30 was high. He laid out one, I think, for a lower number, all the way down to 17.5. Arguably, you could say that it didn't account for inflationary things that would happen naturally on property taxes. But we'll make that available, especially to you, Representative Drazkowski, as we go forward, but also to all the members. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Just one more question, Mr. Chair. I haven't had a chance to really study this bill in thoroughly, but I assume it's written in such a way that these funds are meant to come from Lessard Sam's or LCCMR. Is it possible that these trust funds could be funded in some other way?
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely. The actual payment, right now we are looking at the trust funds as a source of revenue, but if the state opts to pay that 30-year payment with other funds, whether it be general funds, other dedicated funds, or there actually has been some precedents where the acquiring entity who's using acquiring the lands with the intent of its coming up the tax rolls has agreed to pay X amount into the trust. So this legislation is not binding one source of revenue. It's identifying for the current starting process. This is where we think it goes. But all it does is says before the acquisition happens, that 30-year investment needs to be paid into the holding account and then transferred out to the counties and the locals. But where you draw that 30 is a legislative decision.
Let's see, I've got four more questions, and then I think we'll go to testifiers. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I want to kind of follow up, thanks for the question that Representative Torkelson just came on. First of all, I very much support that. I like the concept of that. As these lands are purchased, we have some kind of trust fund put out there to take care of this, so we don't have to have the communities going through what the up and downs of our funding is going to be in future years. But one of the things that would really help me, and I don't know if anyone's done any runs on it, is if there's a way to get an idea, what kind of dollar amounts are we actually talking about? You know, is there a way that someone can take a look at the lands that were purchased in this current last two-year process to see what would that equate out to? And I think that helps provide us some guidance. Are we looking at something that might be easily done, or are we looking at something that might have to be several different sources? I think that'd be something that would really help me as we're dealing with this kind of issue.
Representative Fisher, I do want to make one point, and we'll dig this document up, but I've heard reference, and Representative Hansen could confirm this, in previous Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council meetings, folks have mentioned that the total land bought over the next now 20 more years, over the life of the 25 years of Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage at the end, and this would be at current tax levels, I believe, not adjusted for inflation, that you could say there's $4 or $5 million of annual PILT increase obligations created by Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage. Now that was based on, I think, the first 3 years of land purchases, interpolating that the next 22 years would be at that basis. And as Representative Hansen said, you can enhance, protect, or restore, and that can be fixing up land, putting easements on, or purchases. So depending on how that breaks out, that kind of matters. But that's, if you just kind of think, Representative Ingebrigtsen often talked about $4 million, and I would say you could say it's $5 million, and if you adjust for inflation, it kind of gives you a clue, okay, we're going to set a pot of money aside to make that annual $5 million payment. How much does that need to be? Well, if it was 30 times, it'd be $150 million. If it was 20 times, it'd be $100 million. So that's the amount of money would need to be set aside over that many years. And current, we're spending about $100 million, or we're getting about $100 million for Lessard Sam. So we'll make that document available. It's some help, but it really matters. I often think if Representative Drazkowski's bill was to become law that we may buy more land, because I think the local opposition would tend to fall off. So actually the tilt obligation may increase, because now people would say, local counties are, hey, this is pretty cool. We're okay. We're protected. It's not giving us too much, not underpaying us, but we don't need to be opposed or nervous about additional land purchases. So, Representative Drazkowski, I know that's not your intention.
Sure, that's
but
not the intent of the bill.
Representative Fisher, you have the floor. And then Representative Hansen has a question to this point.
I was just trying to get an idea of understanding. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen to this point.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that might have been said when I was on a previous vacation from the council. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, we all get vacations periodically, Representative Hansen. I can relate. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, thanks for all of your hard work, and Mr. Sulem to put this bill together. It's obviously something that's, and I'm, as Representative Dill said, I'm proud to be a co-author on the bill as well. And I want to start out by saying, you know, I respect and appreciate the desire of many people to make acquisitions. I really do. I do. But I also want you people to respect the wishes of the people that I represent, who have some very, very strong feelings about what we're doing in northwestern Minnesota and across northern Minnesota, taking parcels off of local tax rolls. And the payment then becomes, in some cases, substantially less if it were left in private hands. It makes it more difficult in eastern Kitson County. I talked to a rancher a couple of weeks ago who has a desire, has five children, would love to be able to pass the ranch on to the next generation. Isn't there a fine for that, Mr. Chair?
I don't know.
Well, there's nothing to find double.
Ask the cop. Representative Fabian.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At least it's not during the Lord's Prayer in church or something, too, but like my wife. And her name is Roxanne. Guess what her ringtone is? Oh.
That was funny with the guy. So, anyway, on House File 1707.
I digress. I apologize, Mr. Chair and committee. Anyway, he was talking to me about trying to expand his ranching operation, and there was a fairly small parcel of land that was available relatively near the ranch, and they were interested in buying it. Well, somebody else comes in with deep pockets of money and so forth, and they drive up the price, and it makes it very, very difficult for them to buy that parcel so that they could expand their ranching operation and move it on to the next generation. Some of the issues that have been talked about here have to do with local governments, and Mr. Sulem said that now they have a policy within the Township Association so that there's no net loss in tax revenue. All the counties that I represent have policies in place for no net gain, but they also have policies in place that require local approval on some of these purchases. So it is a very serious matter in my part of the state, and I want people to be sensitive to that. I don't know that a lot of people are necessarily opposed to using these funds to acquire some properties in other parts of the state where there aren't as many, but you know, for us, when you talk about taking parcels of private property off the tax rolls or reducing the payment substantially, it affects our schools, it affects our townships, it affects our counties, our hospital districts, our garbage districts, and so forth. So I just want people to understand that that's very important. Representative Kahn and I have talked about this for a couple of years. I'm concerned about what is the intent of what we're doing. And Representative Hansen and others have talked about what Minnesotans thought going to the polls. You know, folks, seriously, I don't know what people were thinking when they went to the polls. You know, and I don't know that we can speak for those people. But I think in hindsight, when you talk to the people that live where I live, they certainly didn't expect that this was going to happen on the scale that it has in northwestern Minnesota. I can speak to that specifically. maybe the Lesage-Sams Council needs to take a look at addressing Representative Hansen's concerns about getting away from acquisitions for a while and going more to restorations and spending the monies on that and taking the things that have been acquired already and making those into better properties and taking care of the weeds that other people have talked about and doing some of these things that actually enhance them. When you live where I live and you talk to the farmers in eastern Marshall County and you talk about wildlife management areas, they will tell you that they are called wildlife mismanagement areas because by and large, and not because the DNR doesn't want to do things, but oftentimes they don't have the resources to be able to enhance them the way that they could be or should be to actually enhance the habitat and the wildlife and all that stuff. So, you know, we just need to take a deep breath on some of this stuff and deal with the reality of what's going on out there. And again, like I said, I appreciate the concerns of people who want to acquire and do more, but we have to do it with some sort of a sense of what I consider to be reality. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the latitude to make a statement. Thank you.
Thank you. Last question. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this could be to the author or to Mr. Suleman or both. I'm wearing my Transportation Committee hat here for a second, and thank you, Mr. Suleman, for all of your work on that issue. You know, I look at this bill, and even though we're looking at it applies to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, you know, we have a Highway User Trust Fund, and we use that to purchase public lands for roads and use all sorts of land for roads, using that for public purpose. And do you sort of see this concept being extended to other areas? Because you know, that would be of concern if we start paying 30 times the assessed value for all of this land that we're using to build roads and expand roads, et cetera. So, I mean, are you, you know, do you see yourself coming back, you know, another time with this concept for other areas in which we're using state trust funds for land purchase?
Representative Hornstein, do you remember that Representative Draskowski's hustle on transportation?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair. We sit next
I just saw Representative Draskowski.
No, we sit next to each other in transportation.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm worried he's giving you ideas. Mr. Solomon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, part of the reason that our membership modified the wording the policy was exactly some of the issues you're talking about that. You know, we need roads, we need basic infrastructure, and that's a different scenario than the other acquisitions being accrued here. Could this model work for different other areas? Possibly. Would it be a good idea for transportation? I think that will depend on what is done between now and May on real transportation funding. We're not here to advocate that type of approach this time, but if there's another model or another concept that this model would work, you know, I'd be happy to have that conversation. I do want to just point out a comment. Your question did raise an opportunity. Now that we have the letter from the Attorney General office available, there isn't a lot of case law out there on these dedicated accounts. None, of course, on the ones we're talking about now, because they didn't exist but before the opinion was sought. And what it concludes is you can't use dedicated accounts for general things, but you can use them for the specific related issues. And that's what we're talking about. What we're using is to be able to continue providing the roads, continue providing EMTs, continue to provide the search and rescue emergency services, the things that are necessary for those public lands. That's what we're doing with this account. So, yeah, if it would fit elsewhere, quite possibly. Are we advocating for that? No.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Well, thanks, and we can move on. I just, you know, we have all these cliches that we use around here, like kicking the can down the road. That's always a popular one. But this one, the other one we use is the camel's nose under the tent. And so, you know, I worry about this because, I mean, you didn't foreclose the idea. You didn't say we're rushing to do this for transportation, but you didn't foreclose the idea. So I have some concerns about that, Mr. Chair.
Well, in Representative Hornstein, where I tried to make light of the situation and didn't mean to offend Representative Drazkowski, and I doubt I did, but I never actually thought of your point, and it certainly would be one that I wouldn't support, so thank you for bringing it up. It's good to get that perspective. Members, I didn't want to say you're all done asking questions, but we do have four or five testifiers additional. I wanted to give them opportunity to testify and allow for questions while they come forward. I have Matt Hilgert from AMC. Matt, are you? Yes, here. If you could come forward. And then Mr. Ongaro from St. Louis County, I have you next. Mr. Hilgert, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Matt Hilgert, and I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties, an organization that represents all Minnesota's 87 counties.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thanks for having me here today. I'd also like to thank Representative Drazkowski for his authorship of this bill and for Mr. Sulem for putting together and helping with the working group. I'll keep my testimony pretty short today because I know you have a long list of people who'd like to speak. As members are well aware, county governments provide a wide range of valued services to constituents living in all corners of the state. As an arm or creation of the state, counties are also susceptible to ebbs and flows in state funding. Whether providing law enforcement and road and bridge maintenance or administering elections, property taxes serve as counties' main source of revenue in delivering often mandated services to constituents. House File 1707 does not represent an influx of new dollars. House File 1707 represents stability and consistency. In our eyes, this legislation represents a fair agreement between the state and local units of government that any prospective land purchases using the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Funds will include a guaranteed one-time payment of all property taxes owed. This, in turn, will allow counties to properly budget, knowing they can depend on the rightful owed amount, no more and no less, of property taxes every year. In counties with only 10 to 25% of taxable land, PILT payments represent a major fraction of their property tax income. Historic downturns or lapses in funding have had dramatic consequences on the ground and in property tax statements. This legislation will in turn ensure all obligations associated with maintaining and providing services to these lands are met. While this bill may present an increase in staff time, training, and perhaps some technology or software updates, our counties consistently agree that dependability supersedes any upfront costs in preparing for investment funds or allotting staff time for collecting and dispersing property tax payments. As Mr. Sulem stated earlier, this bill represents years of conversation centered on the goal of providing local units of government the long-term financial tools necessary to efficiently deliver relied-on services. Under current law, today's PILT payments are not guaranteed and could be cut at any time, thus leaving counties responsible to make up shortfalls by a mix of property tax increases, cuts in staff, or reductions in services. House File 1707 guarantees counties will be able to budget and levy using a dependable source of revenue throughout the lifetime of the property. With that, I would stand for any questions.
Questions, members? I'm not seeing any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ongaro, you're next. Mr. Ness is after Mr. Ongaro. Welcome, Mr. Ongaro. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm John Ongaro, Government Relations Director for St. Louis County. It is said that the most fundamental responsibility of owning property is to pay your property tax bill. Unfortunately, our state doesn't always believe in that, and this bill is going to help fix that. Nowhere else in Minnesota has the negative impact of having so much public land been felt so deeply than in my neck of the woods in the Arrowhead region. Representative Dill earlier mentioned some of his counties, Cook County 92% publicly owned, Lake County 84%, my county 63% growing. This huge disparity between public and private land ownership has put our region at a very competitive disadvantage. With so little private land, we cannot create the kinds of jobs, economic activity, and tax base which other thriving communities enjoy. But don't get me wrong, we certainly enjoy the outdoors and having the recreational opportunities that this public land affords us. But just like with nature, in order to thrive, you need to have a healthy balance. And our balance between public and private land ownership in our region has simply gotten way out of whack. And it's not just in northeastern Minnesota. There are other areas of the state as well. Clearly, with Minnesota having the fourth highest land ownership of all 50 states, that is already demonstrated. 5 years ago, the Outdoor Heritage Council set a 25-year goal of acquiring 1.5 million acres of private land. Apparently, we must be well on our way to achieving that goal, because in St. Louis County alone, I know that over 24,000 acres of private land has now been acquired by the OHC. And if you remember a few years back, there was the Blandin lands, 187,000 acres that were put into a conservation easement, primarily impacting St. Louis and especially Itasca County. And that conservation easement, if you remember, was purchased with $40 million of OHC dollars, and then Blandin turned around. The ink was not yet dry on that $40 million check, and they marched into state tax court and said, you have to reduce our property taxes on these 187,000 acres now by a tune of 75% because it's in a conservation easement. What all that does is shift the cost, if they are successful in their tax court case, which is still ongoing, is to shift that cost of that 75% reduction in their property tax bill onto the other property taxpayers in St. Louis and in Itasca County. So, Mr. Chair and members, that is wrong. Not paying your property taxes on land that used to pay property taxes, that's also wrong. And what is right is to right these wrongs. And you can begin to right these wrongs today by passing House File 1707. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Ongaro? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Ongaro. Mr. Ness, and then after Mr. Ness, I have Mr. Zettner. Welcome, Mr. Ness. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Lance Ness. Speaking on behalf of the Dedicated Fund Working Group, probably haven't heard of that before, but it's a coalition of some 25 environmental and conservation groups that are supporters of the Original Legacy Act. And we meet occasionally. I'm called the convener and somewhat of a chairman, and that's why I'm speaking for them today.
Welcome. If you could go ahead with your testimony.
As conservationists, we have always supported TILT since the very beginning. And with it has come a trust factor that we've had with cities and counties and state entities. We've continued to support TILT. We note that even in tight budget times, we continue to support TILT, and TILT was not cut during those tight budget times. It continued as it was. What we do support is setting up some type of trust fund within the general fund to take care of TILT. The funds need to come from the general fund because the projects affect all Minnesotans. The legislature needs to establish and budget for this type of a trust fund. We realize that this trust fund does not afford the constitutional protection that the Legacy Act has. And we're concerned that the money diverted from the Outdoor Heritage Account or the Environmental Trust Fund may not be constitutional. I've looked at the letter. I know it's not an opinion, but it does raise serious questions of whether or not this is a legal and constitutional act. That's up for you folks to decide. That's what you're here for. You're legislators. You've been elected by the citizens as well. It's your decision where the money should come from. But I worry and concern, Mr. Chairman and members, that this will be challenged in court. And you can avoid by doing that by simply diverting this and taking it out of the general fund. I'll conclude my remarks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ness. We're going to get back on one of your comments. You made a comment that PILT's never been cut, and I'm not sure. I was reminded that our current fiscal, I've been here evidently pretty long because our current fiscal analyst reminded me that he was in high school when the year I was asking about. So so I'm a little bit, I don't see anybody raising their hand, but I know there's been proposals to cut PILT in the past, and I can't remember if it actually was enacted into law or not, but we'll get back on that point. Mr. Ness, I appreciate. One thing I want to clarify, has the dedicated fund working group taken a formal position? You said you represent them and you meet periodically, and you've taken a formal position on House File 1707?
And yes, we oppose the bill at this time. We're actually going to meet in about a week again.
Okay.
So we haven't had a meeting prior to this, but we had a telephone conference call the other day, and I was told that we would oppose this bill.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted that to be on the record, too. See no other questions. Mr. Zettner, you want to come forward?
I do.
Good morning. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
I will. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Dave Zettner. I am here this morning on behalf of the Isaac Watt League of America, also active in the Dedicated Funding Working Group as the original convener. I live in Duluth. I live in St. Louis County, where public lands are a big economic engine that drives our diversity and our economy. I am not an attorney, so I won't be very nuanced this morning. I'll be very direct. I listened closely to Representative Fabian a few moments ago, and as a retired businessman of over 40 years, owning my own business, my impression is that the situation the Representative Fabian outlined is reflective of the generic impacts of the property tax, not unique to conservation land. When a deep pocket landowner, be they the Wolves or the Vikings, a large banker, whoever it is, drives up the price of real estate, all of us as neighbors find adjustments in our property tax valuation. I looked last night before I drove down at the legislative auditor's report of 2010 on in lieu of payments. And in general, 5 years ago, Mr. Nobles and his staff reported that in lieu of payments, in general, are working pretty well, not equally well with all counties. He noted some of the problems that you've discussed in earnest this morning in this committee meeting, particularly counties like mine in St. Louis County with a significant amount of tax forfeit land, as Mr. Ungerl pointed out a few minutes ago. But in general, our auditor says that in lieu of has worked pretty well. In general, as Mr. Ness said a moment ago, the conservation community supports payment in lieu of taxes, has done so consistently. And while, Mr. Chairman, there may have been times when this was backed off, there's a pretty good record that payment in lieu of taxes has enjoyed legislative support in good times and bad times. The trust fund that's described in House File 1706 and 1707 gives me pause and concern as to, and it's already been mentioned this morning, once it's out of the protections of the Outdoor Heritage Fund or the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund, I am concerned about that Camelin attempt that was raised over here quite appropriately. I'm concerned about vulnerability to future legislative diversion of uses for others. I'm concerned also that using this money from Outdoor Heritage and Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund is not consistent with the vision we brought to voters to protect, to restore, and enhance. I'm going to close this up. There have been a few versions this morning about interpreting the voters' intent, the voters' vision. I, like a lot of volunteers, campaign all, literally all over this state on behalf of the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment. My city of Duluth supported this. 63% of the voters said yes. We're for this vision to restore our waters, our wildlife, our parks and trails, legacy, arts, and culture. I went before a morning Rotary Club in 2008 and told the story of my love for what's now our Legacy Amendment. At the end of it, a fellow I've known for a long time by the name of Bob stood up. And he looked around at his fellow Rotarians. He said, "You know what? You all know me. I'm usually up to impose more taxes. But I'm going to stand up this morning and tell you that we need to support this. This is something we need to do on behalf of our state." After the meeting, and I was grateful, of course, because it was right a home run for me, and I'm very selfish about that. After the talk, Bob came over to me, and he said, "You know what, Dave?" I said, "What?" And let me interrupt myself and tell you that this Bob is not the only person that walked up to me with this message as we campaign. He said, "The legislature will never let you keep this money. They'll find a way to divert it and to take it away." Pretty cynical, but pretty reflective of, as you as legislators meet with your constituents on a particular aspect of it, talking about the tax apropos, property taxes, I respect what your ears have heard. I share with you, and I bring the message of what my ears have heard, and that's why I drove down this morning. Mr. Chairman, I'm done. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Zettner.
Thank you.
I don't see any other questions, but I have one, Mr. Zettner. I'm going to pose it to you as long as you're there. So, Mr. Zettner, you've raised that you think it's problematic for the fund and it puts the camel nose under the tent. When we're done, I want to make sure that I've got it right, but this money would go to the counties and a future legislature could not grab it. So there's not any way for the legislature to decide in the future that, you know, there's a pot of money there that we can grab and take. This is payments that would go out to the county to manage for all the local taxpaying units of government, and it wouldn't be eligible for a future legislature to grab.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Zettner.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I am not nuanced with the specifics of the legislation, and we'll all get back to you on that, but as I stand this morning, we have a system now to take care of it. It's general revenue. The vast majority of our citizens benefit, so it's appropriate that this come out of the general revenue fund as it has, and the specific issues that you so rightly raised that we share with you should be resolved by adjusting the general revenue, not creating a new type of contract, a new construct that I am yet to be convinced is inviolate. I think at this point I'm respectfully disagree with your opinion on it, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I appreciate that, but I would encourage you to listen to your last 30 seconds of testimony. You probably gave probably the best testimony somebody could for repealing the amendment and going back to just general fund, which I don't support. This is a great fund. We're using it to buy more land, which is the reason I voted yes, was to buy more land. But to folks, here's what I'll tell you. When my wife and I moved from 519 West 5th Street to 700 West 6th Street, we bought a house that was substantially larger. Our real estate taxes went up, our heating bill went up, our roof replacement costs went up. I didn't expect Mrs. Hinneker to pay more, my neighbor, to pay more because I decided to move into a bigger house. My wife and I said, you know what, we're going to move into a bigger house and we're going to have additional costs involved with that. When the state of Minnesota goes and buys a section of land in Big Stone County with Outdoor Heritage Council or LCCMR money, why should we expect, take the single example, unbelievable, in Clearwater County, one purchase of land is going to cost every taxpayer in that county a dollar and a half. So if you're the taxpayer in that county with five children, seven people living in that household, if both parents are there, it's going to cost them $10.50 for one land purchase in one county in 1 year. And we have a 25-year plan, and we may be buying multiple pieces of property. Why would we expect the taxpayers in that county to have to pay more so that people can enjoy the use of that land? That's not fair. All we're saying here is let's have an honest discussion. If you want to spend $10 million to buy land, let's honestly say, what's it cost to own the land? We're actually going to encourage more land to be bought. I absolutely argue, because we'll have a fair discussion. Should we buy land? Should we fix the land up? Or should we have conservation easements? But to think we should have one of them pay part of the bill with general fund money, we voted for dedicated funding because we wanted our pot of money to be used for what we want to do. Not to have Mrs. Hinneker pay more for my roof. That's not fair. She's old, retired, and doesn't deserve it. And it's just not right. And so you're arguing against yourself. I'm sorry. But you wanted this pot of money, which I wanted very much, to buy more land. Other people voted for, from the Clean Water point or from the Arts and Crafts point or the Parks point, whatever. My deal was to buy more land so there'd be more land to hunt and fish and enjoy. Now, I've come to really enjoy all the other parts of it, but my narrow thought at the time it passed was that's what I was concentrating on. And I think you really are missing a great opportunity to not jump on the bandwagon. Yeah, so, well, Mr. Zettner.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to briefly respond. I disagree with what you're saying. I'm referring to the general revenue system we have that has been the source of providing payment in lieu of taxes and to adjust the problems that you perceive through it. That's it. Simple. Period. To take that and extract that I've appeared before your committee and made the perfect argument to repeal dedicated funding is a license that I didn't intend you to have at all. And I want the record to make clear that you show that. And you know me well enough to know the work that I've done on behalf of conservation and the legacy amendment. We've got the tools to take care of it in general revenue and to take the pressure off that scenario that you gave without, in my opinion, House File 1706 or 1707. We simply need to have the goodwill in this committee and throughout the legislature to make those payment in lieu of tax adjustments. Thank you.
Well, and Mr. Zettner, my point, I and maybe I didn't make it clear, I didn't mean it to denigrate your testimony or anything. What I was saying, your point, the general fund should pay for some of these kinds of things. And when we buy more land, general fund should pay part of the cost. Again, that's an argument that general fund should already be doing that, and they should do that. I think you have to look at it and think. Sometimes we forget the glass is half full. Don't get an argument over is it half empty or half full. It's got 4 ounces in an 8-ounce glass. That's the important thing here. And so it's important sometimes to look at both sides of it. And I know you're a good common sense person, and I know you and Representative Solberg worked hard on the LCCMR together as co-chairs when that got rejiggered. And so I know you're a good guy, and I appreciate that. And
likewise,
thank you for coming down.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks sir. Any additional questions? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine's not so much a question as a comment, just to address some things. First of all, I've read a great number of the legislative auditor's reports, and almost every one of them, or in fact, every one of them starts off with, in general, things are the system is working, and then he goes on to point out all the things that are wrong, and PILT, there's a lot of problems with PILT. So that's one issue. The other is to change this over to the general fund. We're already scratching for general fund, and there's always more requests than there is money, no matter what. So if we're going to try to take more out of the general fund, that means raising taxes again. The 3/8 cent tax, in my opinion, and at least in my area, was sold as clean water, and out of all the funds there, the majority of that goes to buying land. And it is the tax is an issue, and I support this bill. I'm a co-signer of it. But there's another issue, and that is that when the land is off the tax rolls and in the public sector, then there's not enough, and there's less land for young families to come in and start raising their families in our area. It drives up the cost of the land that's already there, and to the point of it only costing a dollar or something per person. Not every person owns property, so that's a little bit deceiving. The only thing, the one that does get spread around is the increase in the higher increases to the businesses, which then raise their prices, which drives the cost up for everybody, and it's a rippling effect. It's not just the cost of the property tax, everything else goes with it. So I think this is a good bill, and we're either going to have to start addressing the problems with the legacy fund, or you can be certain that there will be efforts to repeal it. And so that's the end of my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Mr. Zettner to come back down, please.
Mr. Zettner. Yes, if you could come forward to the testifier. Representative Fabian, go ahead, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Zettner, you do seem like a common sense guy, as Representative McNamara referred to. And if you ever came up to Rosa County, I'd be happy to take you fishing walleyes on Lake of the Woods. I do have.
Do you want him to answer that, or Representative Fabian?
Mr. Zettner, to your point about the points that you were making, I would ask you. Do you support the idea that local county commissioners should have any kind of approval or say in the acquisition of lands that will be taken off of local tax rolls and then will become the responsibility of the state, and the net effect to that local county or township would be a reduction in local property taxes?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Fabian, I think over the years, even though that's been an agonizing process at times, it's worked reasonably well. And it's forced the conservation community, Department of Natural Resources, and county government to have that interface. And like all human contrivances, it's not perfect, but it seems to work, and I have no reason to sit here this morning and oppose it.
Representative Fabian.
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who wants to speak for or against the bill? Is there anyone else in the audience that wanted to testify for or against the bill? No one else? Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would ask for a roll call, but before we go to that, I'd like maybe somebody from the DNR, based on the last question, just to explain county board approval. I'd like to get that on the record, what the status quo is. I don't know if DNR is here or just could explain what happens when there are acquisitions now.
Okay. I see Mr. Meyer coming forward. Assistant Commissioner Meyer, if you could weigh in on when we have local approval and when it's not necessary. Commissioner Meyer, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR. Currently under statute, when the state acquires land, we're required to get county board approval, so we spend a lot of time at the regional level working with county boards, talking about acquisitions we're doing, also with our strategic land asset management discussions that we're having with all the counties, but you know, staged throughout the state. We're sitting down with the counties on a county-by-county basis talking about how do we change that plat map, how do we move parcels around, exchange, sell, things of that nature. So,
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Meyer. Do we have any model now where the DNR or revenue would provide oversight to 87 counties having funds in perpetuity? Do we have any system of checking that or anything where we look at county funds right now?
Commissioner Meyer, and maybe as you answer that, I'm carrying a bill that I believe does this for DNR, a similar program. Maybe you could talk about that, because I don't know if you currently have, but you have a proposal in conservation easements for me to carry a bill that is somewhat modeled after this same principle. Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, members, as Representative McNamara is discussing, we're seeking authority to establish a conservation easement monitoring account, where we put funds in based upon the acquisitions of these easements for the long-term monitoring and enforcement activities of encroachment issues. I think, Representative Hansen, perhaps what you're thinking of is the county funds in individually throughout the county, throughout the state. I don't believe the language sets up that kind of authority. Once those dollars are appropriated into the county ledgers, so to speak, you know, I think the state auditor does some auditing of those accounts, but I'm not sure how much work, how much scrutiny that would get. But you would need to make sure that those funds are being distributed appropriately as current PILT payment, and that they're there in perpetuity. I know, you know, the bill does offer a state kind of option as well, it appears. So, you know, there's two different ways to go, but that accountability and transparency is important. Our bill that we're hopeful to get passed and signed into law would provide that auditability at the state level.
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. Mr. Sullum, I think, or Representative, I'm going to go to Representative Hansen first, let him ask his questions, but in the end, I'm going to have a question for you in this regard. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, my question was actually Representative Johnson is presenting a bill, and I'd like him to be excused from the vote because he's actually probably not going to get back when we get to that. He has got a bill for his city that's up, so I don't know if that's possible, but I don't think we're going to be able to get him back because he's in testimony in another committee right now.
Okay, well, Representative Hansen, I will, when the time comes, have the pages go check with him and see if he wants to vote or not, and we'll leave the board open. If the pages come back and say he wants to come back and vote, we'll allow him to come back and vote. The vote will take long enough for him to be able to do that if he wants, and then if he doesn't come back, he doesn't need to come back naturally. Were you done with your questioning, Representative Hansen? And Representative Hansen, does that mean you're asking for a roll call? Representative Hansen, thank you. So Representative Hansen has requested a roll call. Mr. Sullum, if you can talk about the way this is envisioned, the money going into the fund that the counties then have the option to put back in the State Investment Board, does that allow future legislators to grab that money that's in the State Investment Board if there was a shortfall, say, and they wanted to use the money to make that year's PILT payment or something? Or how do you envision that?
Mr. Chair, again, Ken Sullum with the Township Association. Once the money has been appropriated by the state into that special account, and then the special account transfers it to the county based on acquisitions that occurred in the prior 12 months, once it's in the county control, it is not subject to the state coming back and rating it. Even if we do contract with the Board of Investment for getting the trust to work well, it still would be the county's funds. It would still be their money after the transfers come from the state special account, which also has some protections. The state, that's part of the reason we're putting the holding in the state special account, is that that is not rated in the same manner that the general state funds are. So we're getting somewhat protection at the state level, and then once it's actually appropriated and paid down to the locals, this legislature has no ability to look back and raid that account.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Well, Mr. Chair, that raises some concerns, because after everybody here is dead and gone, each county could raid it. I mean, if there's no oversight, then each county could use it for whatever purpose it has without the oversight instead of the legislature. Whatever happens in the legislature in the future, I'm assuming, is going to be pretty transparent. But what happens two or three or four generations from now in each county, there could be a large pot of money in each county that nobody's watching. And but bad budgets will probably come sometime in the future, too, at each level. So you got to have 87 eyes out there looking on it, and that concerns me a bit.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Sullum.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's why we have language specifically in the bill. They cannot raid, the county cannot raid their own trust. They can only withdraw the amount that is certified for the property tax, the county school township tax. You would not be able to just withdraw more than that. And if the trust is low, there's an absolute cap that the withdrawal in any one year cannot be more than 5.5%. And so, yes, is there a trust fund that is going to be there as a large pot of money in order to generate the interest and pay the obligations? If things are working, that's exactly what's going to happen. But the statutes lock in what the counties are allowed to use that for. And then the counties and the townships, school districts, as was indicated, we all have annual reporting requirements to the state auditor, so the state auditor will be reviewing both the income that came in and the expenditures that go out. So there's going to be oversight. The voters, of course, have very direct oversight if they think there are fun and games being played. that affect their taxes. Mr. Chair, if I may also address a question that was asked or some of the issues surrounding that PILT had never been cut. I cannot state, going back to the creation of the fund, that there has been cuts or not, but in the most recent budget cycles that we were having major shortfalls, there was a definite proposal to reduce PILT funding that remained in the negotiations until basically the zero hour when the governor realized that the specific impact of that reduction was so targeted at certain parts of the state as to not be an equitable reduction, and so we were able to pull it out and save it. However, the other part of the of that equation is there was no increase in PILT for many, many, many years. And so then the purchasing power goes down, and as you're acquiring land, you have one, you've got a pie that's set at one amount. That pie never grows. There's never increases to that pie to pay out the PILT, but you're now spreading out the need. You've got a lot more land needing to be covered by that same piece of funding. So the percentage of funding to the properties would go down in that regard as well. So there wasn't a specific budget cut by the state, but the practical impact of having more people needing to eat from that pie and not having more pie there in terms of the dollars, and then the inflationary incidences led to the fact that PILT was drastically, drastically underfunded to meet the true need.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. I have one more testifier. Ms. Gibson, one of the citizen members of LCCMR, would like to testify, and then members will go to a vote. Welcome, Ms. Gibson. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nancy Gibson, and I am co-chair of the LCCMR. And I just saw this bill the last couple days, so I hadn't planned on testifying, but I do want to bring up a couple things. Number one, it was stated that they contacted all interested parties about this bill. Those of us on LCCMR and the Environmental Trust Fund have never heard about the meetings that were going on, so this was a surprise to me. Secondly, I want us to also take into account the benefit of having public land. The parks are well used by many of the people, most of the people that live in our state. A lot of these public lands help protect clean water. They prevent soil erosion. There are a tremendous amount of benefits for having this public land, and I think when we go into these formulas, we also ought to take that into account. I do have questions about the legality of it. It says we're supposed to protect, enhance, and restore. If the money goes to the counties, they can use that money for police, roads, bridges, and I want to make sure that that is clear. And I also am concerned about the transparency, how this money will flow from the State Board of Investments, how they're going to invest it. And then I have my final point about what we did in the LCCMR this year. We have $1.5 million of land for state parks and another $400,000 for WMA. This is from willing sellers. And when we appropriate the money, sometimes these willing sellers, they change their mind. We have to go and change and get other property. That's just the way it has worked for years, and you know how it works in the Outdoor Heritage Council. I don't know how that would be into the formula. And so I think what I'm saying is, number one, I think the LCCMR ought to be consulted on how we do this. There's a lot of intricacies that we deal with. There are some changes. And so I think there need to be some parameters of how we deal with some of these changes. So with that, I can't say I'm for or against it, but I do think that it needs some more scrutiny.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, since this is making a big deal of a roll call vote, I just want to make sure that my response is recorded. I'm all in favor of buying public land and acres of it. But I'm going to vote for the bill to bring attention to this and hopefully get the sportsmen that passed the Hunt and Finish Amendment to use their same hard work to put pressure on legislators to however they can fund this, because the local government's got to be paid back, and so does the farmer. I mean, this whole mess, I'm in three different programs, Pollinator, CRP, and SAFE, and I get about half of what I could get if I put it into production. And so to bring attention to this whole general fund and or whatever mechanism, the government's got to be paid for the tax loss and the people that donate the land have to be paid, and so I'm going to vote for the bill to at least bring attention to the matters. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Drazkowski, I've got one question. On line 2.6 of the bill, where trust fund payment appropriation, I've got some concern, and I'd ask you, it really is a tax issue. Two concerns I have I'm hoping you'll address. One is the 30 times rate that Mr. Solomon has said he believes is supported by fact. I'm hoping that you and the tax committee will look, I think it's in your purview to see what number is appropriate. I don't want there to be a winner or loser. I'm trying so that it just equitably pays. So I'm hoping you and taxes will look at that. I believe that's a tax issue. Representative Drazkowski, on line 2.16, my second issue is eligibility for a one-time trust fund payment. And then on line 2.7, it talks about if at least 20% of the land is used in either LCCMR funds it or Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage. My hope would be, Mr. Solomon and Representative Drazkowski, you can find a way that this is prorated. I think from a constitutionality standpoint, I'm nervous that Lassard Sam's or LCCMR money would be paying someone else's bill. So you get where I'm coming from. I'm not sure what the answer. It's not a simple question, but I believe it's a legitimate tax question that you can address there, and I would suggest you find a way. Maybe you offer the property can either be enrolled in this program or stay in PILT or something, but it should be either in or out. I think it would be problematic to be enrolled in both programs, but at the same point, and I don't know if there is any good examples of where Lassard Sam's or LCCMR was only buying 20% of the interest or paying for 20% of the interest. So if you could work on that, that would be one of my concerns on the bill. I don't know if either one of you have comments on that. It looks like you may. Mr. Sullum.
Mr. Chair, I guess what I would say in terms of the comment about making sure that we're not paying somebody else's share with this revenue. Again, I point out that the language is very expressed. The amount that can be withdrawn is the property tax that was assessed to that parcel. And then that assessment is reviewed every 6 years. So it's treated as if it was just a regular property owner, if you will, with the exception of instead of annual increases, there'd be a six-year interval between look-back. So they're not paying anybody else's share. It's the share that is truly assigned to that parcel that has been acquired.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're on top of it, and you heard my concerns.
Absolutely.
I think you addressed them. I want to respect Representative Johnson just got back, Representative Clark, you have a question? Go ahead.
I did. First, Mr. Chair, I want to apologize for accidentally leaving my phone when I went out of the room. I understand it created a little drama. I apologize.
We thought it was Cornish's. You're okay. Representative Clark.
Secondly, I was just trying to understand. I don't remember who it was that said whether or not there might be money taken out of the State Investment Board. And I'm just wondering, have we ever done that? I mean, I'm not aware of that being rated for state purposes. And so that was one of the red flags that I thought was raised. I'm trying to understand.
Representative Clark, it would only be the money that got put in by the counties in the Investment Board, and they would be allowed to take out 5% of it a year to use to pay the taxes. So it's nobody else's money. It would only be the money in a separate county, separate account. So potentially, Mr. Solomon, there could be 87 accounts if all the counties decided to put it in with the Investment Board, and they would be kept separate, and those counties would only be getting some of 5% of their, 5.5% maybe it is in the bill, 5%, whatever, of their own money back. They're not going to get Representative Rukavina's retirement pension from the state, or I didn't need to use his name, but anybody, any of the former representatives that are in the pension plan under the old plan, it would not get any of their money.
So, Mr. Chair, that is absolutely correct. The money is, you know, first staged in the holding account, then it's put into, given to the county. The counties have to have it in that permanent trust. Okay. The Board of Investment is simply a management tool. They're simply available as a manager of the trust that has a very good track record, and has been very successful, and so we wanted to make that an option for the counties, because a number of counties aren't going to have the staff to try to manage a trust.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. Chair, maybe a better example, instead of Representative Rukavina's pension, would be my own father's MnDOT pension. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add.
Representative Drazkowski.
Yeah, the 5.5% is set in the bill in order to protect the fund, and that's why that's set there. But otherwise, unless the fund was getting low, you would never use the 5.5% rule. It would be less than that, correct, and it would be the actual amount of the property tax payment.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thank you for your indulgence. I'm sorry I had to be gone. But I want to join my neighbor, Representative Cornish. I will be voting yes, too. And this is based on the last 2 years I've heard of what I consider kind of a festering sore on what Minnesota is doing really well. And this issue of property tax issues up in the North Country is very real. And I think the long-term impact of that SOAR is significant, and we need to address it. I'm not convinced this is the perfect way to address that, but we need to move the discussion forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I renew my motion that House File 1707 be passed on to taxes. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara.
Yes.
Clark.
No.
Cornish.
Aye.
Dill.
Yes.
Fabian.
Yes.
Fenton.
Yes.
Fisher.
No.
Green.
Yes.
Hackbart.
Aye.
Hancock.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Houseman.
No.
Heintzman.
Yes.
Hornstein.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Neuberger.
Aye.
Purcell. Poppy.
No.
Rarick.
Yes.
Torkelson.
Aye.
Uglum.
Yes.
There being 14 ayes and 6 nays, the motion is passed. House File 1707 is, as amended, I'm sorry, members, as amended, is on to taxes. Tomorrow, members, we have a number of bills before us. We're adjourned. Thank you, members.
Thank you.